Can you imagine ancient civilizations having incredible technology? Michael Cremo's done a lot of work in that field, and he'll be taking your calls on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back with you, along with Michael Cremo, as we talk about forbidden archaeology. What was it, Michael, that first got you interested in this?
Well, that has to do with how I grew up. I was born in a military family. My father was an intelligence officer in the United States Air Force. So when I was young, I lived in all different parts of the world. I went to high school in Germany. I lived in Wiesbaden, Germany, and I went to high school at an American military high school there. And during my vacations, I would go to different places in Europe. I hitchhiked on one of my vacations up to Stockholm in Sweden. I was staying in a youth hostel there. And I had met some young people, Europeans, who had gone to India and back overland. You could actually do it at that time. Now that part of the world is such a dangerous place. Not very many people would do it these days. But in those days, you could actually do it. You could actually travel overland by train and bus and from Europe to India.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me some just really fascinating stories about their experiences in India, going to Nepal and Kashmir and places like that, encountering yogis and things like that. And I decided, well, I'd like to go there someday. And I became interested in Indian philosophy. And a few years later, at a Grateful Dead concert in upstate New York in the early 70s, I got a copy of Bhagavad Gita from some Krishna devotees who had been traveling around with the Grateful Dead. And, you know, I got the book from them, and I took it home, and I read it, and I became very interested and eventually became the disciple of the guru who had translated that,
really?
That book. So that got me further interested in studying the Puranas, and that's where I began to encounter all these accounts of human civilizations that had existed millions and millions of years ago on this planet. And I had to wonder, is that just some mythology, or is there some factual basis for it? So that's what got me looking into the history of archaeology and writing the book Forbidden Archaeology. And then people began to ask me, well, if we didn't come from the apes, if, you know, like Darwin says, where did we come from? And my answer to that question was my book, Human Devolution, a Vedic Alternative to Darwin's Theory. So it kind of one thing led to another. So that's how I became involved in all of this.
And you never looked back, Michael.
Never looked back, and I always want to keep moving forward. No use in looking back.
Well, this hour is going to fly by. Let's go to Joe in Buffalo, New York. First-time caller. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hello, how you doing?
Okay.
I have an idea about time. It only exists for Earth because of its relationship to the sun and its rotation. But outside of our solar system, there's no time. It doesn't exist.
Hmm. Interesting thought.
Well, I agree with the caller there that I think there is a level of reality that is beyond time as we know it in this world. In this world, we experience time in terms of past, present, and future. And this was one of Einstein's realizations as well. You know, I was talking about him. He said, this time that we experience in terms of past, present, and future, that's an illusion. And ultimately, I agree with him. Of course, we now are experienced, we're on a level where we have to undergo that experience of past, present, and future. And we experience the destructive aspect of time. Everything in this world that is material, it comes into being, eventually it's destroyed. So I agree with the caller that there is a place, there is a level of reality that's beyond time.
Michael, are you a believer that we were created by seeded extraterrestrials, or we just evolved on this planet?
I do accept what you said right there in the beginning, George, that we were seeded here by extraterrestrial beings. And I would say, in one sense, we're all extraterrestrials, in the sense that I think we have to understand what a human being really is. For some scientists, a human being is a machine made of molecules in competition with other machines made of molecules. I don't see it like that. I see that we are beings of pure consciousness. And as beings of pure consciousness, we're not from the world of matter. We're not terrestrial. Our origin is not here. The origin of our bodily vehicle may be from here, but that conscious self that is within that vehicle, it has an origin that's extraterrestrial. And as you said, that seed of consciousness is extraterrestrial, and it was placed here.
What a story that was. Did you ever meet Zechariah Sitchin?
Not personally, but I'm familiar with his teachings. I've met lots of other people. I've met Eric von Daniken.
Good guy. They're all good guys.
So many of the researchers. But I never had an opportunity to meet him. I had an opportunity before he departed this world, but you know, the scheduling of it just didn't work out that I was able to meet him at a conference that he was speaking at.
I was fortunate to give him a Conscious Life, a Lifetime Achievement Award,
right
before he died. But it was kind of funny because he was up on stage, and I think it was close to 90, might have been 90 at that time, and I said, Zechariah, in front of the audience, how old are you? And he went, that's very rude.
Now, was that a question for me?
No, I was telling you my Zechariah Sitchin story.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, how old are you anyways, Michael?
That's a question for me?
No, I'm kidding. Let's go to Land in Santa Ana, California. Welcome to the program, Land. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna. I found a Bhagavad Gita from the 1970s, and that got me interested, like Michael Cremo. And because of Ancient Aliens and...
He's the best.
And Robert Oppenheimer misquoted the Father Time part. But anyways, I was talking about a Vimana that's older than the one... Lord Salva got from Lord Shiva, the Pashupuka Vimana that Lord Ravana took from Lord Kuvera in the Ramayana.
You follow that, Michael?
Yeah, I know. He's talking about a Vimana that there was a king named Ravana. You know, he took possession of this Vimana. It's another example of extraterrestrial technology transfer. And, I've been to the Angkor Wat temple in Cambodia, and they have carvings on the temple walls in Angkor Wat in Cambodia depicting this Vimana that the caller is talking about. It was in the possession of this King Ravana, who was a pretty demoniac sort of guy, and he engaged in war with Rama, who was an avatar of God. And in the battle, Rama took possession of this vimana, and that is depicted in stone carvings that are in the Angkor Wat temple in Cambodia.
Next up, let's go to Louise in Louisville, Kentucky. And Michael, I got to tell you, she believes she's the reincarnated Cleopatra. Hello, Louise.
Hello, George. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited. 30 years ago, I went to the Krishna Temple in Los Angeles. I don't know if it's still there, but I went to a couple of the meetings. I went to the dinners that they had after the meetings. They also had an exhibit room where they showed beautiful paintings of scenes from the demonas and the people and Krishna and the blue gods and all, and it expanded
all
my
still there, all still
they're
there.
Still there.
They're still there.
They're still there.
Tommy asked me where it was located. I couldn't remember because it was so long ago, but I was so comfortable with the people, and it was just a beautiful experience, and I still have the Bhagavad Gita book, which I studied diligently, and it taught me so many things. This was 30 years ago before many ideas that are out now were being expounded by the Krishna people, and it was just a great experience. I'll never forget it, and I still love the Bhagavad Gita because it has such beautiful knowledge and teachings in it. And I wanted to just let the guests know that I appreciate him giving the ideas about the Krishnas, the Demonas, the blue people. All of that is just something that the people of this world don't really know much about.
Michael, where are the Krishnas these days? They used to be on every street corner.
Well, I don't know about every street corner. I think they but here, you know, in Los Angeles, we're in West Los Angeles, Culver City area, but some of us have gone onto coast to coast and into universities and all over the world. So it's but some are still out there doing the chanting in the streets. That's still going on. Sometimes I do it myself even.
Let's go to Tom in La Jolla, California. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. And Michael Cremo, it's a pleasure to speak to you. You know, you mentioned Albert Einstein reading the Indian scriptures, but there were also other scientists, Robert Oppenheimer, who was the top scientist on the Manhattan Project, wrote in his memoirs that he developed the idea of atomic ignition by reading the Vedas.
That's right.
And then there was physicist Max Planck, you know, who developed the idea of a matrix theory of the universe, and Paul Dirac. And it makes me wonder, Michael, when, from where I stand, when you look at past civilizations, really great civilizations like Atlantis, Lemuria, Mu, you know, associated with India, it seems like they didn't depend on computers or iPads or artificial intelligence. They depended on the mastery of the mental arts, meditation, alchemy, magic, the law of attraction, the law of attention, as, say, Lynn McTaggart, you know, speaks about. And so I'm wondering, and when you look at people like Bhaktivedanta or Yogananda of Self-Realization or Muktananda of the Kundalini arts or the Karmapa of the Tibetan arts, they all spoke about these previous civilizations centered around consciousness and the mastery of consciousness. And so I'm wondering if you would speak, well, you have spoken about that, but that it seems like these civilizations, when you look at their temples, like Giza Plateau or Göbekli Tepe, you know, They talk about building them through mental intention, through light and sound, and through meditation. And so it appears, from where I'm standing, you don't need computers or artificial intelligence. The computer is your mind and the mastery of the mental arts, the mastery of meditation, etc. And
yeah,
I was wondering if you would expand on that.
You're absolutely, totally right about that. And these ancient civilizations, they were dealing with more subtle energies than we're accustomed to dealing with today. You're absolutely right about that. As a matter of fact, a lot of our modern technology, I believe, is our attempt to express in gross material form abilities that people once had naturally, like remote viewing, for example. In Vedic times, it was called Doordarshan, the ability to see what's happening at a distance. So now we have television and smartphones and all of that, which can be commercialized and used to, you know, be monetized and sold to people and be used to control them and manipulate them and things like that. But it's our attempt to, it's modern civilization's attempt to manifest in gross physical matter abilities people once had on the level of consciousness or the more subtle material elements. So yes, you're absolutely right about that. I totally agree with you. And ultimately, the highest technology, you could say, is purely spiritual. It's even beyond the subtle material realm of things, which itself is pretty amazing.
Michael, what's your take on the pyramids of Giza? How do you think they constructed those?
You know, it's kind of interesting what the caller was saying, you know, because there are traditions that say that they were manifested by jinn. You know, the people, mm-hmm. you know, they have a kind of an Islamic picture of things, that they were manifested by jinn. In other words, spiritual kind of entities, subtle entities, used mystic powers to manifest them. That kind of tradition is there in that part of the world. And, of course, there are some people who will say, yes, we know how they took millions of huge blocks of limestone and whatever from the quarries and move them and stack them up in those pyramid forms. But I'm not really convinced that that's exactly how it was done. So I think there is some room for some other types of explanations of how these things were manifested.
Michael, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment. Michael Cremo, as he talks about forbidden archaeology. Next hour, author Suzanne Falter joins us talking about supernatural events that have surrounded her life. We will talk about her incredible story on Coast to Coast. When we come back in a moment with Michael Cremo, we'll take your final phone calls as we talk about forbidden archaeology. It's just fantastic. George Norrie back with you, our final segment with Michael Cremo. We'll get your calls as well. Michael, tell us about that new discovery in the Philippines where that archaeologist was excavating in a cave in Luzon.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. You know, he had been excavating there before, you know, and he'd found some human remains, maybe 25,000 years old or something. And then he just kind of stopped because the the doctrine that was accepted by most archaeologists is that there wouldn't be anything older, any human remains older than that in the Philippines. You know, so he had just stopped. And then, but then there was this discovery in Indonesia of a creature they call the Hobbit, you know, which was this very small human-like creature that was older than 25,000 years. So after that discovery was made in Indonesia, this researcher in the Philippines decided to dig a little bit deeper, and you know, he found some human-like remains there that were older than 50,000 years, maybe 100,000 or somewhere in that range. But what I found very interesting was that the reports about this discovery when they came out, you know, mentioned that just in a very offhand way, that he had found similar evidence in deposits about 700,000 years old. And that really caught my attention because, you know, why skip over that? You know, that is really amazing, you know, that he found evidence possibly of a human presence going back 700,000 years, which would be really anomalous, because the current mainstream idea is there's no evidence for humans like us, Homo sapiens, going any further back than about 300,000 years. So that is something I found really amazing about the reports coming out of Philippines last year.
That's pretty dramatic. To the phones we go. Let's go to Joseph in San Diego, California. Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. I would just like to say I've been waiting. I've waited. I've listened to Coast for probably since the beginning. And every time Dr. Michael Cremo comes on, I have to just take a deep breath because he's the foremost scientist infusing spirituality with understanding how the material cosmos interacts with spirituality. And what I'd like to know is, biblically, there's a 1,000-year period where we prosper. Is there a time period within the Vedic knowledge that is 1,000 years? Or I know there's a period of time where in Kali Yuga, we will have sort of a spiritual awakening. So I would like his comments. I'll take him off the air.
Okay.
And,
yeah. Thank you. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, the Vedic concept of time is cyclical. That their time goes in vast cycles called yugas, and the cycle starts out with a golden age. It's called Satya Yuga, the age of truth. And in that age, people live for vast periods of time. They live very simply. They live very naturally. They live very peacefully. And then in the next age, it's called Treta Yuga. Things become, they start organizing themselves into social groups and classes. And then in the next age, which is called Dwapara Yuga, you know, they become involved in highly developed civilizations that there's conflict among them. And then in the next age, the Kali Yuga, which we're in now, it's called the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Things become very degraded. It's kind of predicted that there will be increasing levels of social and environmental disturbance, which we actually see going on around us. I think we can all see that hardly anyone is thinking that the environment is in a really wonderful state right now. There are increasing levels of desertification. We're poisoning the air, poisoning the land, poisoning the water. Species are becoming extinct. It's, you know, there's the climate change going on. It's all predicted in the Puranas that would happen during this age, and we see the predictions playing out. But it's kind of interesting, as the caller was suggesting, that, say, even when winter is coming on, you can get a few warm days that go against the trend.
Yeah.
So caller's right. Even though the general progression of this age is downward in this age of Kali, there is an opportunity at the present moment, according to the Puranas. There's a period of about 10,000 years, which we're just starting right now, where the trend will go in the opposite direction of the age. The trend of the age is downward towards more ignorance, more quarrel, more hypocrisy, more environmental degradation. But even though that's the trend of the age, we can, during this period of time that we're in now, which will last for about another 9,500 years, the trend is up. So we should take advantage of that.
Let's go to Tom in Port Angeles, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Mr. Cremo.
Hi, Tom.
See, I'd like to do a shout out at the end of this for a friend on Sheridan Beach, but
sure thing.
There was an ancient religion in Persia. They were called the Zoroasters, and their deity was Ahura Mazda.
Uh-huh.
And their chief prophet is depicted in stone carvings at Persepolis and elsewhere. And I have always seen that as a man standing in a ring with very elegant large wings attached to it, and the disc or the loop that he has in his right hand is like a wireless control mechanism to make the machine work, and it's complete with landing gear and everything. Part of his robe is probably part of the guidance system. So have you ever seen that?
Yes, I've seen things like that. And also there are some images from Sumeria and Assyria, you know, a little further west than that, than Persia, yeah, over in what's now Iraq, that are similar, showing winged figures. It looks somewhat like a modern military insignia for the Air Force. You know,
interesting.
Air Force officers today wear.
What do the beans look like, Michael? Like gargoyles?
The ones from Sumeria, they're depicted as human-like or bearded, but there's this winged element to them. So I think all these things are indicators. They're ways of depicting the fact that humans on this terrestrial level of reality have been in contact with other beings from other dimensions of reality or levels of reality that had the ability, either naturally or by some kind of mechanism or device like a demona or something, to be able to fly and transcend in that way.
Let's go back to you, Tom, for your shout out. Go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, shout out to Joan Milner on Sheridan Beach in Lake Washington.
There you
go.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Tom. Thanks for being part of the program. Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, Michael, two slightly longer questions. Talking about right now, you were talking about cloak technology at any point, but even in this era, at the beginning of World War II, you had a certain level of technology. Towards the end, you had the Germans developing whatever it was, the V-8, and you had the atomic bomb appear out of the thin air, apparently. And even if you look at the moon landing, there were robots there, but were there really robots anywhere and disseminated in technology on the Earth? So I'm wondering about cloak technology now. And my second question goes back to what Tom from La Jolla was talking about, consciousness. And if you look at Plato and the writing, his writings, and the Homer's Iliad and Odyssey, some of the characters you would reference maybe magic, sorcery, or could it have been directed consciousness? And if you look at an example from the movie of Lord of the Rings, where Liv Tyler was being chased on the horse, she was from Middle Earth, the character she was playing, and they caught up with her at the riverbank, and she just uttered some words from Middle Earth, and all of a sudden the flood came over the four dark figures that were chasing them. That could have been magic, but it also could have been her directed consciousness causing the flooding, the sudden surge of water. And that's why I think maybe the pyramids were built. It was some people that just channeled directed consciousness and actually built it just through their minds.
Go ahead.
I'm actually a supporter of a consciousness-based universe, that what we call matter is really, in one sense, an illusion. Not that it doesn't exist at all, but that it's a temporary thing that originally emanates from consciousness. I would say consciousness is primary in the universe, basically. So I agree with you on that basic point. And just a couple of things. You mentioned, you know, robotics. And the descriptions of vimanas that are there in the Puranas, there are accounts of one vimana that was like a flying city going through space, traveling from planet to planet. There was a yogi named Kardama Muni who had decided to take his wife, Devahuti, all over the universe, going from one planet to another with this flying city, this vimana that could travel in outer space. And it said that inside this vimana, they had gardens and fountains and birds. There were real birds, and then there were also mechanical birds, robots, in other words, that were just as real as, you know, in other words, the real birds would go up and fly around with these mechanical birds. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because in modern drone robotic technology, you know, the military has been developing drones that are like robotic birds. Yeah, because if you have a normal drone that looks like a mechanical thing flying around, you kind of obvious what it is. But if it looks like a bird or insect, you know, it may have an ability to go places unrecognized. So, yeah, I just thought it was interesting how there are parallels between, you know, robotic devices described in these very, very ancient texts and what our modern military is doing now. And a caller was pointing out some some things that appeared pretty mysterious to him, like the appearance of atomic bombs and jet airplanes and missile technology and World War II seemingly out of thin air. It may have been the result. I mean, there are many accounts of how before the war, agents from different countries, including Germany, were traveling all over Tibet and India and Nepal to get a hold of ancient weapon technology.
And some of them probably did. Michael, thank you. The clock's got us. Michael Cremo, website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, supernatural events.